Hello! Welcome to the final episode of 2025 of the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast where we talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Horror Movies of All Time list. My name is Clay. With me, as always, is Amanda. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm doing well. I'm here to tell you, Clay, rebuild yourself, bitch.
Mm-hmm. I have that tattooed backwards on my chest.
So when you look in the mirror.
Exactly.
Yeah, nice.
I think this might be the first movie that you and I really fight about because
Oh, really?
We're talking about Black Christmas 2019. Amanda loved this movie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you loved this movie.
No, Amanda loved this
movie. I'm taking the I hate this movie position.
Oh, okay. Then we'll be fine then.
Yeah.
This is, to round out, this is the second
end
remake.
End the year on a low note.
Listen, it's been that kind of year, okay?
Yes.
This is the second remake of our beloved Black Christmas. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to hear us cover the first remake, the 2006 remake, Black Xmas, as it was known in America, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile and check out our whole year's worth of remakes and reboots that we are rounding out here.
Now
with a movie that has the same title.
Yes.
The other ones.
Yes.
And also, get ready because next year we announced that we are doing sequels.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have a full list yet, but our first film in January is going to be Gremlins 2. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you check out the Patreon for
that. It's going to be quite a ride, I think.
Just in general or for Gremlins 2 specifically?
I mean, both.
Yeah.
Both. Gremlins 2, absolutely. But in general, like,
yeah,
you know. Just sequels opens up a lot of ground.
Yeah, I think I'm really going to stretch
the definition
of a sequel in some instances.
A teaser for the future.
But anyway, we're talking about Black Christmas from 2019. It is not on our main list. It has a 41% Rotten Tomatoes score.
Really?
With a 31% audience score.
Okay.
Had you seen this before?
No. No, I had not. Mm-hmm.
Did you know it existed?
Actually, no.
Yeah.
Not until we started talking about doing this, mm-hmm. like to round out our full coverage of Black Christmas. Yeah, I don't remember it coming out at all.
Yeah. I think this one got pretty quickly memory holed. As the Blank Check podcast likes to say, this movie doesn't exist. It's one of those movies where at the time it is of its time.
Yeah.
To a fault.
Yes.
And I think, looking back on it is,
painful,
very fascinating. I saw it. I did not see it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it at home. I can't remember how much after it had come out. This might have been one that I decided to, I think I probably avoided this on principle.
Yeah.
And then somewhere in the haze of COVID, I probably was like, well, I may as well check this out.
I'm trapped inside my house and there are no new movies coming out.
Yeah,
so.
Especially since there was such a backlash to this, or I should say such a polarized response to it.
Yeah.
I can't understand why. So I wanted to see it going into those kinds of movies, I always try to steel myself and be like, not just immediately pick up the stray influence of X, Y, and Z.
Sure.
I was kind of hoping maybe I would have a different opinion.
Yeah.
But I do not.
Yeah.
What that says about me, I don't know. But some reviews that I've seen for this imply that if I don't like this movie, I should re-examine myself.
I
also another an article from 2019 that is very 2019.
Yeah, I'm deeply curious about whose reviews those were.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I didn't read the whole
thing.
Yeah, we are going to take a quick break, play the trailer. This is another one. If you've listened to the coverage of Black Christmas 2006, one of the things we talk about is that they changed footage in the trailer. in order to kind of present a movie that's very different from the one that they actually got.
Yeah.
One of the things in that trailer is the voice on the phone is like a guy, it's like Scream, basically.
Oh.
Where it's a voice going like, "Tonight, I'm your Christmas candy." Yeah. Like that kind of thing, which does not happen in the movie.
Yeah.
This one, the trailer for this one also included some things that were altered with CGI in order to, I don't know, I guess, preserve the twists, which don't exist.
Huh.
Anyway.
Okay. Hey,
listen to the trailer. Come back. We'll talk about it.
I'm excited to spend the break with you guys.
I'm going to go get Christmas lights for the dinner decor. Do Christmas lights expire?
Where's Helena?
Love you too.
Sorry. We shouldn't have let her go back by herself.
She's fine.
Come on, live a little.
No, wait.
Some of my roommates are missing.
If I were missing, I'd want you to unleash the bloodhounds and track me down.
They were at the DKO fraternity last night.
Still creating problems, huh, right?
I will bring you to your knees.
There's someone in the house.
What the?
Run!
Who did this?
You need a reminder of our power?
You messed with the wrong sisters.
Okay. Black Christmas. Directed by Sophia Takal. Written by Sophia Takal and April Wolf. Starring Imogen Poots, which is probably the second most English name next to Benedict Cumberbatch.
Of course.
She actually has, Imogen Poots actually has horror movie cred. She was, she's the girl, the sister of the two kids in 28 Weeks Later.
Oh.
Yeah. And I think she's popped up in a couple things, but I generally think she's pretty good.
Yeah.
Elise Shannon, Lily Donahue, Brittany O'Grady, Caleb Eberhardt, and Carrie Elwes. Amanda?
Yes, Clay.
What happens in Black Christmas 2019?
You couldn't tell? You didn't follow the movie? You didn't understand the plot?
I had my eyes averted from the TV.
The nuance.
And they told me many times what was happening, yes.
A group of female students is stalked by a stranger during their Christmas break. That is, until the young sorority pledges discover that the killer is part of an underground college conspiracy.
Sure.
Close enough, right? Yeah. Well, Clay.
Mm-hmm.
Some things you'll find in the 2019 version of Black Christmas include a waste of Carrie Elwes.
Yeah.
just starting with that point right up front.
He's an interesting cat because I feel like he never quite hit the way that he or Hollywood thought he would.
Yeah.
Because he had his big moment in Princess Bride, obviously.
Of course.
And then in the 90s, early 90s, he was the lead of Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yep.
He was in that movie, The Crush. I think that's, it's kind of like Lolita.
Okay.
With, I want to say Alicia Silverstone, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
He was kind of poised to be like a pretty substantial movie star.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just kind of, you know.
I mean, he has steadily worked.
Yeah, oh yeah. He shows up in stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I will give him credit for finding maybe not incredibly consistently, but he's found some good kind of memorable roles. Like he was the stepdad in Liar Liar. He was really good in that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy, he's the main character of the first Saw movie.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I guess gives him more horror cred than
than one would
people.
Think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fake inflammatory quotes.
Yeah. How do you feel about that when they start with a quote that is from a character from the movie? I don't know. Like, I remember, did you ever watch The Wire?
No, I didn't.
So every episode of The Wire starts with a quote from one of the characters in The Wire. And the first episode starts with a quote from a character who's in The Wire. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching the first episode going, what the fuck is this guy? Like, why do I give a shit what he says? Like, as you go, it weighs a little bit more because it's like it's characters you know.
Right. So. I was going to say, I feel like that mechanic can work in an ongoing TV show that is also a kind of a deep character study in a certain way.
Yeah.
It's a little tougher.
I think it all depends on the context and what you're trying to do with the quote.
Right. Like, if it's supposed to feel ominous, you know, like ominous or profound or something, it feels weird to present it. I don't know. I'm like, you really couldn't have dug around and just found something that an actual person said that kind of gets this point across.
What I find interesting about this one is the quote that they choose to put here from this fictional university founder.
Yes.
Is so on the nose giving you the thesis of the movie.
Yes.
That if they had just stopped there.
Yeah.
And then never brought that stuff up again for the rest of the movie, you would still go, I don't know, it's pretty on the nose.
Yeah, yes, yes. I, not to get too sidetracked into the actual discussion of this movie, between that epigraph and then the fact that it cuts to the very stereotypical looking hallowed halls and the guys chanting Fraternus Fratorum, I was like, oh, the fake out of this movie is going to be that there's an evil frat.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I should have removed the term fake out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. We'll
talk about that.
Things we'll find. You will also find the obligatory glass unicorn.
Yep. Must appear in any version of Black Christmas.
Any sort of Black Christmas that one might be filming.
Yeah. There's the unicorn and the bag.
Yeah.
The bag over the head.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, the bag over the head in this one was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty good.
Yeah. It was a decent gag. Yeah. You'll find the professor of Not All Men 101.
Yeah. yeah. Okay. We'll get into it.
The ruthless misogyny of higher education.
Yep.
A straight up steal from Exorcist 3.
Yeah.
I love that all of these, usually you have a commentary or a joke or a little detail to flesh out when I say these, and this time you are just shaking your head and kind of sighing.
Well, it's because I'm listening, Amanda.
Is it because you hate women?
No. the Exorcist 3 thing, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that because, like, on the one hand, part of me is like, I can't believe they just straight up steal the Exorcist 3 gag.
Yes.
But on the other hand, like, a good 10 minutes of the climax of The Untouchables is just stolen from the Battleship Potemkin. And I know I'm really equating two situations that are very different. But I guess in my mind, it's like, well, it's not like people don't do that all the time. I think it's just because they straight up just do it.
It also feels weirdly out of... It feels out of sync with the rest of the style of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, the way that sequence is shot.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it just, like, stylistically, it feels kind of jarring.
Yeah, because like it does the whole thing where it leaves, you know, it's the static shot, and then it's the girl going between a couple rooms and stuff.
Yep.
So that feels very... When you've got a shot like that in a movie that later on features a sequence where I think there's about 1,700 cuts
of
a person trying to put a key into the door of a car.
Yes.
It's a little jarring. Yeah.
Exactly. Some things you won't find in this movie include nuance, mm-hmm. subtlety, mm-hmm. suspense, mm-hmm. realism, mm-hmm. or logic.
You're telling me that you've never asked for a tampon or something and then just shoved it inside your pants?
Without any sort of maneuvering of removing your pants,
yeah,
or
I don't know.
Going to the restroom, or, you know, washing your hands afterwards?
Yeah.
Ew.
I just assumed that the thing I took away from this movie is that mm-hmm. this is a real look into how girls are in college. And I just assume that kind of thing happens all the time.
So can I be serious for a quick second?
Sure.
When this movie started, like the beginning of it, mm-hmm. like when we get to the girls in the frat house, in the sorority house, excuse me, and they're having their little secret Santa,
mm-hmm.
for a blissful few seconds there, I was comparing it to the 2006 Black Xmas.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is just five women sitting in the same chairs for 2 hours.
Right. In like very kind of impractical clothing, mm-hmm. for what you might be wearing just like kicking around your own house at
yeah.
night.
Maybe you're going to a party, but they're not going to a party.
They're not. Yeah. It's supposed to be like lounging, like clothes. You're like one step up from PJs, mm-hmm. and they're all in like baby tees and like skirts and high heels.
Mm-hmm.
In this, I was like, oh, this kind of makes sense. Like, they're all wearing like cute, like Christmassy pajamas, but they are very like pajama-y, you know, like they're mm-hmm. wearing like a t-shirt and some silly pants with like a candy cane pattern or whatever.
Right.
And some of them have silly little headbands or whatever on, and they're having their own sorority Secret Santa gift swap. And they're mm-hmm. all making a charcuterie board and just like giving each other shit and having fun in the living room. And I was like, oh, okay. This mm-hmm. is going to be like slightly more realistic about like, I could see this really happening. And then the rest of the movie happened.
Yeah.
And I was deeply let down.
Well, before we get into that, I'd uh-huh. like to do something to keep us tempered a little bit here.
Okay, please.
So let's first talk about the things that we liked in this movie.
Okay.
I'll go first.
okay.
I actually, so kind of jumping off what you were saying,
mm-hmm.
I thought that the depiction of college felt more lived in and real than the other two. It's tough to say with the first one because, you know, it's 50 years ago or whatever.
Sure.
But, like, I want to say the biggest hang-up for these movies that take place at a college, even though it's technically baked into the concept, is it's always a college where you only see five people who go to the school.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
This one at least gives you a sorority house that's filled with girls at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You see a frat house filled with students. There's a cafe that they go to.
Yeah,
so
and
there
they're
is
in
a
lecture hall, and there's a bunch of other students. Yeah.
There is a campus life.
Mm-hmm.
There are other sorority houses that have other people, which I think probably leads to one of the better gags in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was... I liked that. I actually thought it looked pretty good.
Yeah.
It felt kind of like, it reminded me a lot of House of the Devil, where like they're clearly going for a throwback kind of look to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they're, like we talked about when we did Suspiria on Patreon, the remake of Suspiria, they're using a lot of Zoom in this, which has a very retro feel to it. Cause people don't really do that anymore. The whatever they're shooting on, I can almost guarantee they're not shooting on film, but whatever they're doing to the video, it's giving it some grain to have it and to give it sort of a retro sort of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the lighting by the other obligatory thing you must do in a Black Christmas movie is light most scenes by Christmas light.
Yes.
And I think this one is more successful than the 2006 one.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that movie is just really
not an
painful
attractive
to look
looking
at.
Movie.
This one's a lot softer, and the lights give the movie a lot more ambiance instead of just, you know, ironically wanting to pull your eyeballs out.
Yep. Yep.
What else did I like? I thought a couple of the kills were inventive. I liked the snow angel kill.
Yeah.
I thought that was a cool image.
Yeah. I wish the snow acted a little more like snow. Not to be criticizing when we're trying to be positive. Mm-hmm. But.
Not like she was killed on the salt planet from
yes.
Last Jedi. Although I do have a problem with killing someone by stabbing them through the sternum with an icicle.
Yeah.
Put that on the list of things that similar to the last, to the 2006 one. I thought the bag over the head was good.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Imogen Poots was pretty good.
Yeah. I will say, I don't...
Now you go.
Thanks. I think the actors did the best they could with the roles they were given. Do you know, and the movie they were given. Like, I actually think this movie does a decent job of making the girls feel like individuals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all kind of felt like they had different personalities, and there were sort of pre-existing relationships between them that didn't feel like, you know, you didn't feel like, oh, these people just met. Like,
sure,
they had Christmas traditions together.
You don't just shove a feminine product down your pants in front of someone you just met. Maybe that girl does, though. She has that kind of energy.
She might. She did kind of have that energy. But, do you know what I mean? Like, I think the movie actually did a pretty decent job of making them feel mostly like real people. Mm-hmm. And, like, they had interpersonal relationships and tensions and, like, conflicts. And there's clearly certain characters who are the bigger personalities in the group, and then the other characters kind of, like, there's one of them at one point says, like, when you guys fight, it stresses me out, so I'm gonna go find the Christmas lights.
Yeah.
And it's clear from that, those kinds of exchanges, that, like, yeah, these two characters have butted heads in the past. And I appreciate that. Like, I like that it feels like they have friendships and relationships and tensions at times, but also, like, a bond that isn't just based around, like, being snippy and kind of bitchy towards each other, because the 2006 version, other than the main character, all the other sorority sisters, their personality was, like, mean and drinks wine.
Everybody's awful in that movie.
Yeah. Whereas in this one, there were clearly, like, there's clearly, like, group dynamics and things going on, which I liked. I agree with you that it was a much better looking movie than the 2006 one. I think it had some interesting images. Like, there were some moments and specific shots that I was like, ooh, that's kind of a cool visual. Like, there is a shot of the bust of the founder with the kind of black ooze coming down from its eyes. And
which was the stuff from Prometheus.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's on, like, a pedestal in a room that's, like, kind of the red cloaked walls and all of this. And that was kind of a cool image. I think the girl, the poor Diva Cup tampon girl, who gets murdered, there's that shot where you can see she's in the, like, architectural feature on the front of the house.
Yeah,
like, kind of
not
laying,
quite a balcony, but
no, it's, like, clearly decorative. It's not somewhere that people, like, go and hang out, and you can't see the top of it from the ground. And there's that shot of Imogen Poots walking away, and you can see her her body there, the way that it is with in the original, the girl who ends up in the attic.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of other stuff that I could compliment on this. I do think it works in some references to the original in a way that is at least somewhat more subtle than the 2006 one.
Yeah.
Like, it's still very phone based of, like, somebody mysteriously contacting you to kind of torment you.
It's the worst version of that.
I know it is. It absolutely is. But, like, the plastic bag, like, thing, when that happens in this movie, it's fun because it's been reversed. It's the girls doing it to one of their attackers, which I think is, like, a creative way of including that kind of homage. I think it's really funny that the cat's name is Claudette.
Yes.
Like, I don't know. Got
to gender swap that cat.
I think that's really fucking funny. Like, you could have just made the cat Claude, but no.
Nope.
Claudette.
Has to be.
Which is genuinely, I think, a good joke, if it's meant as a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, That part's over. I will say at the top here, this is a movie that Garth Marenghi, I think, would love because there is zero subtext.
Yeah.
The idea of subtext in this movie is, I would say, a laughable conceit.
Yep. Everything is exactly how you guess it's going to be from the first opening.
Literally the epigraph there.
Yes.
It's, you know, men are super powerful. Yeah. Aren't we great?
Yep.
Obviously written by a rich white guy and presented as a negative. Mm-hmm. That's the tone for the rest of the movie. And the thing I keep fighting as I'm watching this is this is a very angry movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's I'm fine with it being angry.
Sure.
I just think it's I wish it was just more skillfully done in what it's angry about.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I don't know. Like, where do you draw the line between a movie that's just clearly sort of like venting about a subject and something that is like when does that become any less effective than what am I trying to say here? why does this not work in a way where something like an exploitation movie that is venting about something else and it's just angry about a certain thing and it's just that's the move what the movie is about. Why is that more acceptable than this, which is just so... is it because of the subject matter? Is it because of the time when it came out? Because this is, you know, this is like the height. This comes out in 2019, which is right before COVID hits and sort of clears the board from a lot of stuff.
It's like peak of Me Too.
Yeah,
like
it's
all of that
right
happening.
After Me Too. Yep. They've done the big Women's March thing. As I joked when we were watching this, I'm surprised at the end they don't all put on the pussy hats before they start fighting. Like, I want to know what you think because, like, I feel like it's a combination of any kind of lack of subtlety.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know how much I really want to. I've like watched and liked plenty of things that have zero subtlety.
Yeah, yeah.
And what is it about this that just is so off-putting?
It's preachy.
Yeah.
You know, like it's preachy in a way that I think is like deeply unproductive.
Yeah.
This movie to me feels like a psyop. Like this movie feels like it secretly
was made by Stephen Miller.
Yes. Yes. Sincerely. This movie makes me think that like J.D. Vance watched this and thought it was a documentary and was like, what the fuck? Those girls murdered a bunch of mind controlled young men at the end. We need to clean out the colleges. Like
this is the this is the future liberals want or something.
Yeah. No, seriously, this movie is so. Like, when you strip the nuance out of something like this so thoroughly and you flatten it so much, and then you add in all the very, like, they're adding in all these different elements, right?
Yeah.
Like, you've got college campuses, which are, to this day, you know, notoriously the sites of the culture war, right? Like, it's shifted somewhat, but it's still very much, there's a lot in the U.S., there is so much panic about what is being taught on college campuses and who's allowed to do and say what.
I've always kind of chuckled at that because I feel like they say that every 20 years.
Yes.
Like, if you go back to the 60s, all the people who are saying that now were the ones out there waving the flag for the Viet Cong in the, on their college campus in the 60s, you know?
Yeah. And if you actually spend any time on, like, the vast majority of college campuses, they're fine. Everything is normal. It's just, like, kids trying to go to the fucking math class and, like, meet up with their crush for lunch. Like, that's all that's happening. It's very mundane.
And you, just to put it, just so it doesn't sound like we're two old people speculating, you work at a college.
Yes, I do. So. I am there on the regular, and it's just, like, a normal-ass place where like people are trying to go to class and go to work and like
where they walk around lives. Constantly with a hand cocked up ready to slap you.
Yeah.
Depending on what you say.
Yeah, you wear the wrong color on the wrong day of the week and mm-hmm. you get thrown in jail.
Mm-hmm.
But no, you know, like I was thinking about this myself. Everybody who has listened to this podcast more than once knows that I'm not a big fan of like rape revenge films.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why they exist. I understand why people like them or find them cathartic or whatever. Generally, I don't find them enjoyable to watch. Mm-hmm. They're not really my cup of tea. But I sincerely watching this movie wished it had just gone full rape revenge film.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would have been a more tolerable watch in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because this movie just, it picked every little thing. It's like, okay, we're going to go after the classics professor because there's no women and people of color on mm-hmm. his syllabus, which is like, fine. If you want to be frustrated about that and try and do something about that in a real college, your prerogative. Great. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But in a movie, it's juxtaposing that and like, they made us move the bust of the founder out of the like main hall of the school to like this girl got raped and no one believed her.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. It's conflating all this stuff that is like at much different levels of severity and, mm-hmm. and it's treating them all like you need to devote your entire life and energy to like fighting every little bit of injustice that you think you see on all levels and treating them with all the same level of urgency.
Yeah.
Like it just, it becomes so preachy and with no opportunity for nuance. Like there's no, even from the beginning, you don't think that the frat guys are good.
Right.
You know, there's not even like a, you know, I was thinking about something like The Last House on the Left or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that those characters who attack those girls are bad from the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they attack the girls, they kill them, and then later on they end up like staying in the parents' house.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the parents don't know that they're evil.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like more commentary there about, you know, people who seem otherwise normal can do horrible things mm-hmm. and it's a very specific event. It's a specific event that you, the characters then react to and you, the viewer, get to react to.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just so like, let's take every pet topic from 2018, 2019 and thrust it into one movie and it feels very pandering.
Yeah. And that's where I start to wonder about, so that in and of itself is not necessarily a problem because like I said, it's a very angry movie.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to get angry about those things,
mm-hmm.
you have the right to do that in whatever the art is that you're making.
Sure.
I think the problem for me is that there seems to be so little self-awareness about the things that they're conflating.
Yeah.
That I was watching a review of this on YouTube and someone kind of summed it up pretty well where they said this movie, it feels like you're watching a Reddit thread. No, I'm sorry, a Twitter thread.
yeah.
And it's like, because that is the substance of the movie feels about as deep as mm-hmm. people arguing on Twitter.
Yes.
And they're using so many of the same sort of buzzer. There's a scene when the girls are arguing
uh-huh.
and then the boyfriend is like, what did you expect? And then he goes into his thing.
Yes.
He like goes down a checklist of things that are just like things you shouldn't say to a woman.
Well, yeah, and they don't feel like I think part of my issue with this movie is also like as much as I was complimenting the way that the sorority sisters feel like, oh, they have like relationships mm-hmm. and pre-existing traditions and things that make them feel like more well-rounded characters. Every single male character in this is completely flat.
Yeah.
None of the male characters are allowed to have any nuance or like a depth at all.
Yeah.
And that makes it really like, what am I trying to say? there's not like a satisfying way to push back on them.
Yeah.
Like they're just, they're just bad.
Yeah.
They're just evil. And then the one guy who's held up as like the one like genuinely good guy, Landon.
Yeah.
He's not really given a character.
No, he's pretty, he's a wet blanket.
Yeah. And it's.
And the other one, the boyfriend.
Yeah.
Like, so to kind of, excuse me, to kind of, I guess, example of what I'm saying, where like there's so little self-awareness of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where the boyfriend blows up at them, right?
Yeah.
And starts saying like, oh, calm down, you're acting hysterical.
Yeah,
like, every buzzword, everything you could possibly
think of. He literally says, not all men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no point where, and like the implication, I think, is that the frat has done something to him in that moment because he has like the headache beforehand.
Yep. And he keeps kind of switching back and forth between seeming like his normal self and then getting kind of aggro.
Yeah. Which is, it's a whole other problem.
Yes. We'll get into
but
that.
But regardless.
Yeah.
When that happens, there's no moment where any of the girls were like, well, that was weird. He doesn't usually do that.
Yeah.
It just turns into another argument, like another facilitating of this one argument that they're having about men and et cetera, et cetera.
Right. They're not like, hey, we've known Nate for like 2 years. He's never acted like that. What was that all about? Like, is he okay? Is something going on? Like, even the fact that they have a fight and the girlfriend, Marty, immediately is like, get out of my house.
Right. Yeah.
Like, get out of my house.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know. That feels kind of weird that you wouldn't be like, whoa, you're my boyfriend. We've been together X amount of time. Like, everybody seems very comfortable with him.
Right.
He seems very kind of, you know, built into the friend group, into the sorority. They seem like he's just around a lot and, and they all like him and they hang out.
Needs to be a non-threatening male.
Yeah. But they go and they buy the Christmas tree together. Like, you know what I mean? He's at the talent show performance. Like, he's very much like a part of the crew. So you would think, that there'd be some sort of reaction to him acting so out of character. And instead, it's just like, well, I guess I don't know what we expected. He is a man.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's probably an argument that people might make where it's like, well, they've been writing female characters like that for years.
Sure.
And I always hate that.
I get
that.
Frustrated when they write female characters like that.
Right. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I hate that as an argument because it's like, you don't, if it's a thing you don't like, that doesn't mean you need to do it also to make it equal, you know?
Right. And I don't think that having the girls notice him acting really weird would like lessen the impact of it happening.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I actually feel like having them acknowledge it, that kind of can happen in real life. Like, you can know someone for a while and then they get red pilled or whatever and they fall down a rabbit hole on the internet and start saying, you know, whatever thing they start saying, and you're like, what has happened to this person that I know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that can happen in real life. I don't think it's like breaking the fourth wall to have them acknowledge.
Yeah. I also, not to just keep drilling into this, because I feel like we could do this all night, but like, I feel like even so, I guess it makes more sense if he's under control, whatever. Because like the argument that he makes, even the argument he makes is one that you would find on like a Twitter thread.
Yeah.
But that character would not make that argument.
Yeah.
When he says, well, what did you expect? You just called them a bunch of rapists.
Yeah.
If they did a thing where they called you a bunch of whores, wouldn't you be mad? And they're like, it's not the same thing, Mark, or whatever his name is. And it's like, I understand, like, he knows it's not the same thing.
Right.
Because that one girl was actually raped.
Right.
It's not like they're just being cheeky towards the guys and they went too far.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. It's not like we just don't like them.
Right.
It's, yeah, I think one of the main problems with this movie is that even like even in college, even if, you know, you're friends with a bunch of women's studies majors, like, people don't talk like this and don't act like this in their real relationships in real life. Like, if this frat defended the frat brother who raped one of the girls in this sorority, they wouldn't go to their events.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, like it just wouldn't happen this way. And the idea that like they're all completely focused all the time on things like rape culture and misogyny and whatever. It's like, no, that's not how a real person would behave. And I think so much of it feels like that extremely online rhetoric around this.
Well, that's where I feel like you have to look at this as an exploitation movie. Because, you know, if you watch Truck Turner or like a blaxploitation movie, it's like, not everybody who lives in Harlem acts that way all the time. And not every white person is, you know. So like it's clearly jacked up to a heightened level. But there's like, I feel like in those kind of movies, generally there's a bigger sense of awareness.
Yeah.
Like the thing that really, one of the things that really bugged me is it's got the main friend character who was trying to get Carrie Elwes fired.
Yes.
Because of the syllabus of the class.
Yes.
And at no point do any of her friends say like, that's insane.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And like that's the kind of back and forth where if you had a friend and your friend said that, you would probably go, that seems like a bit much.
Right, to get him fired?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like that kind of thing where it's not even acknowledging that this is insane.
Yes.
In a movie where they're trying to, you know,
right. Like sure, have a petition to the department that forces him to include some like other material. Sure, that did happen at different college campuses. Like that kind of shit does happen.
Yeah.
But most of the time it's not like fire this man.
Right.
Like it's more like he should have to include something by whoever. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you think, here's the more we talk about this, and I really like your point about bringing out like exploitation films and thinking about this as an exploitation film. Part of what makes exploitation films work in that specific subgenre, in my opinion, is that everything is heightened.
Mm-hmm.
So the way people talk and behave, but also kind of the plot and the action of the movie is usually like borderline unrealistic.
Yeah.
This is a PG-13 movie.
Mm-hmm.
So the violence can never get really violent. The gore can never get really gory.
Yeah.
Do you think this would work better if it had just gone full rated R and that some of the violence got really crazy and so it felt more fully like you're living in this very heightened version of reality rather than what we got instead?
It couldn't hurt.
Yeah.
because I think that stuff, if it's going bigger on that kind of stuff, I think that does provide a more forgiving backdrop to like you're saying, the intensity of the, because when you're going, apparently they cut it down specifically to get a PG-13 and the director wanted it to get a PG-13.
Oh, wow.
Because she wanted it to be accessible specifically to girls and young women who wanted to get into horror movies and also learn about feminism, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think like when you start saying that kind of stuff, I'm like, well, I don't know. Let's write a book.
Right. You know, then we're somewhere in between a PSA and an after school special.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If it's like, well, I purposely want to engineer a piece of media to talk very, very explicitly about rape culture and misogyny, and I want it to be accessible to young people and therefore like extremely clear.
Yeah.
Like I want this to be very legible to a 14-year-old who's never been exposed to the concept of rape culture or feminism in their life. You're kind of like flattening it out so much at that point that it stops feeling like entertainment.
And I also I personally feel like if you are making something with an eye on it being taught at school,
yeah,
you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Like there was a comic book that came out a handful of years ago that was dealt with a lot of this kind of stuff. And it was, I read the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
or the first trade anyway.
Here's your trophy.
The first issue, mm-hmm. fantastic. Mm. I thought the rest of it was not great. Mm-hmm. When I got to the end of the book, there was a thing in the back about how best to use this in a classroom mm-hmm. for a teaching thing. And I was like, get the fuck out of here, man. Like, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but come on. You know,
yeah.
that's not how this works.
Yeah.
You know, Ray Bradbury didn't have, like, a guide to teaching Fahrenheit 451 in the back of his fucking book.
They added those later.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I think this movie handled in a different way could have been an interesting reimagining of the original.
We haven't even talked about that. Where I mean, I know. It, like... This is a remake in name only. I mean, there's yeah. some tenuous connections.
Right. There's some surface connections, and then there's some basic plot. Like, yeah. they're on a college campus. The girls kind of, for a little while, they're disappearing one by one, mm-hmm. but it's not even really that clear that they are. The cops don't really help.
Yeah. I would That's say, it. When we were talking about Suspiria on Patreon, mm-hmm. Well, one of the things we got into in the remakes in general is that there's a really interesting kind of choice you have to make mm-hmm. over whether or not you're going to remake something
mm-hmm.
or take the concept and kind of bring your own perspective to it.
Yep.
And then let that guide whatever your new story, which is what Suspiria does very successfully.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is a version of the same idea that is mm-hmm. not successful at all.
Yeah.
Because I think there's... It's too different
mm-hmm.
to be something that fans of the original would be into.
Yeah.
And it's the things that they add to it,
mm-hmm.
it just, it's like, what's a good example here? It's like if you remade it's like if you remade like Sense and Sensibility
mm-hmm.
and added ninjas to it.
Yeah, they did that with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yeah, but that's on purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm saying like, no, this is just Sense yeah. and Sensibility.
But also ninjas.
But also, my interpretation is yeah. the last act I think needed the Yakuza to show up yeah. or something. You know, it's like, because like the whole... frat thing mm-hmm. and like there's this mysterious black goo
yeah yeah and like that, rumors that Calvin Hawthorne, the founder, was a black magician,
yeah, which is all stuff we learn through dialogue.
Yes,
there's this movie is so much expository dialogue.
Yeah,
there is actually a sequence when Imogen Poots and her friend escape into the car
mm-hmm.
and they're driving in the car
mm-hmm.
In that scene, Imogen Poots literally recaps the movie up
yes.
to that point.
Yes, she does. Yeah.
And it's just like, it's one of those things, it's the worst kind of...
They also do the thing that you love, which mm-hmm. is, oh, she hasn't been the same since the incident.
Yeah, I fucking hate that shit. But it's like...
And then you find out pretty much immediately that the incident was she was assaulted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they do another thing that I don't like, mm-hmm. which is when you get your exposition out
mm-hmm.
through someone... saying, wait a minute, you're telling me that yeah. and then just say the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You're telling me that the frat has access to this black goo coming out of this sculpture
yeah.
that can mind control people and they're using it to kill. It's like
to kill a bunch of the girls on campus who don't do what they want.
Yep. Yep, that's thanks for catching us up. You know, it's I fucking hate that stuff.
Yeah. It's also, you know, thinking about the original versus this, like, you know, really looking deep into the remake aspect of this, in my opinion, part of what makes the original work for a bunch of different types of viewers
mm-hmm.
is you can be nerds like us
mm-hmm.
and you can find these like, ooh, you know, we're talking about like gender issues and these different things and the girls aren't believed. Like there's all these men in positions of authority and they don't believe the girls. And so blah, blah, blah is happening. But you can also ignore that stuff.
Right.
And just watch it as like a Christmassy slasher flick,
mm-hmm.
and just enjoy it on the surface for the like suspense of like each girl getting taken out one after the other while like the killer circles closer and closer to the main character.
Yeah.
And you can just like that. You can't avoid the sort of message,
right,
or the lessons or the themes in this movie.
This...
Like you can't just watch this movie to enjoy the plot.
Yeah.
Or the vibes or the visuals. Like you cannot view this film as just a piece of entertainment. Mm-hmm. It will not let you.
Right. Yeah. this is like the movie equivalent of someone who watched the original and then mm-hmm. is talking to someone else who's like, I don't know, I didn't really like the original. And they're like, oh, well, you didn't get it. And
yeah.
then explaining all the stuff we talked about when we covered the original, where it's like, no, mm-hmm. because actually it's actually all about misogyny
mm-hmm.
and the way that women are put down. It's like that. It's the movie equivalent of someone just saying that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no fun.
Yes.
It's fun.
Right.
Like it's fun when you can figure this stuff out for yourself.
Yeah.
And find these things on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I it's tough for me to go so hard against this one for that, because there's so many things that I've probably watched and liked that do this that mm-hmm. has not bothered me. I maybe not something this political, I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if we're also hypersensitive to it because this you know, COVID made time weird, right? Like I feel like the years 2020 to 2022 mm-hmm. rather than being 2 years were like both 10 years and also 2 months at the same time.
Yes.
And so 2019 is such a different world.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it also is not that long ago.
Right.
Like we're talking 6-7 years at this point. We were very much adults.
Mm-hmm.
We were very much kind of already past this sort of culture war on campus stuff.
Well, I have come to learn
mm.
that if you do something shitty, mm-hmm. doesn't matter if you're an adult.
Uh-huh.
If there's about 7 years have passed, you can mm-hmm. say I did that when I was young and stupid.
Yeah.
So I can say something really dumb in
right
2019.
Now.
And if I ran for president, they'd be like, remember when you called that person, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, well, I was just so young and stupid.
Young and naive.
Like, when you were 36?
Yeah.
Like, yes.
Yes. But do you know what I mean? Like,
And now I run... Never mind. I'm
yes,
gonna get
yeah, yeah.
In trouble.
But sometimes I think when things are so recent, it can be painful to look back and see it in this flat way.
Mm-hmm.
With all of the nuance stripped out. And none of the social context, none of the, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It can be painful to look back on it and be like, wait, was that really what it was like then?
Yeah.
I don't think it was,
well,
though. I think it was just like a very vocal part of the internet was
yeah.
really, really hung up on all of this stuff to an extreme degree.
Well, here's a question. Maybe it's different because back then this stuff was like, it was... so much, it was so hot at the time.
Yeah.
But like, what is different about this compared to, say, the America Ferrera speech in Barbie?
Because
Barbie kind of, it's a similar kind, it's not as angry, obviously,
yeah.
but it's a similar level of frustration
mm-hmm.
with similar kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that lauded? And this is, get out of my face, you're preaching at me. And to be fair, there are a lot of people that thought Barbie was too preachy.
Yes. I was going to say, I think there's a pretty sizable component of people who very passionately hated the Barbie movie.
Sure.
I think a big difference is that the Barbie movie was fun.
Probably.
Like the Barbie movie was funny. It was entertaining. And
the rest of the script was really smart.
Yeah, exactly. And like there was also parts that were just fucking hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sorry, but Ken doing the Matchbox 20 song
mm-hmm.
is really objectively funny.
And see, that is as skewering a take as anything mm-hmm. that they're trying to do in this movie,
mm-hmm.
but it's done so smartly.
Yes.
Without bringing attention, not explaining the joke or anything. That I think that's, I think that's the biggest thing. Because Black Christmas, I think, just on top of everything else, I think is just a poorly made movie.
Yeah.
There was one thing I was thinking about where, like, I don't even, the thing that really shocked me as I was watching this again was there's so much talk about this character who's the one who assaulted Imogen Poots.
Yeah.
I could not tell you for $1 million what character in the movie that guy is. Like, they talk about him.
Yeah.
I think he shows up at some point.
He does.
But he's got, like, no, I think maybe he's at the end. He's, like, calling her a bitch or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, he's not a character in the movie.
Right.
And he's not really presented in any sort of filmmaking way to make him seem like this big thing.
In fact, he and the other frat brother that's, like, more of a presence, they look so similar.
Yeah. And,
it's,
like, when...
It's genuinely hard to tell them apart.
When she's working at the coffee shop...
Yep.
And she's kind of giving the googly eyes to the Landon there.
Yeah.
The frat guy comes in and she immediately clams up and it's like, oh, this must be the guy. No, just different guy.
It's his friend.
Different. Yeah.
It's his frat brother.
And then when she's on stage, they kind of do that shot to the crowd and you see a bunch of the frat guys and she kind of clams up again.
Yeah. One of them is the guy.
Apparently. Yeah. I guess.
And then he's one of the two or three main frat brothers at the climactic confrontation at the frat house at the end who like verbally torments her.
And I don't know if that's like a choice on purpose to not make this rapist character have any power in the movie,
because he does have power, right?
Right,
because she's clearly so affected by what was done to her.
Right.
It's interesting because the more we talk about this, I'm also starting to think about the movie Men.
I was thinking about that too, where I was
hadn't
like,
been until now.
It's a much better version of this story.
It is, because at least, like, I think, you know, I genuinely hadn't even been thinking about it until like 3 seconds ago. Mm-hmm.
You know me, always thinking about men.
Always thinking about men.
Mm-hmm.
But Men sort of does what I was asking, in a way, it does what I was asking you earlier, which is, would it work better if they just go full throttle into. Mm-hmm. Some weird heightened version of reality, or some version that goes past reality into unreality. And that's what Men does.
Yeah.
And what you see watching that movie, what's portrayed on screen during the movie Men is indistinguishable from what the main character perspective is, right? Like,
yes,
you're seeing what, I forget her name, but with the main character
off the show,
I'm fire me, please. You're seeing the world as she is seeing it.
Right. Yeah.
And there's really no way to tell how objective or flawed that perception is because you're so deeply in it.
Yeah.
This movie does not do that.
Right.
In this movie, it really is that there is a bust leaking goo. And you have to smear this man's goo all over yourself, and then he will give you alpha man power or whatever. Yeah. And I don't know. We don't explain the mechanic past that, and then we burn down the frat house. And
right.
I don't know.
I don't know, man. one other thing I did really like is the reveal that this is happening at multiple sororities at the same time.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that, so I'm very torn on that because on the one hand, I do think that's an innovative way, something innovative to add to, it's like, okay, they're going after all these girls. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do think it kind of takes some of the focus away from the Imogen Poots character.
Yeah.
Because her sort of, the rebuilding of her bitch is such a focal point of it that to have this, it goes from feeling like it's about her to just very clearly not being about her at all.
Right.
And I don't know if I like that.
Yeah. It's also like, this is the sort of when this movie gets into the bigger plan here, mm-hmm. the bigger overview of what is supposedly going on, it's where it really loses me.
Yeah, you mean when Carrie always talks for about 10 minutes explaining everything? God.
And like the more you think about it, the less sense it makes. Mm-hmm. Like, why would they choose Christmas break to do this when mm-hmm. most people have left campus and gone home?
Right.
Like, kind of unbelievable that this many of the girls are even still there at this point. Like, especially since most of the rest of the movie, they're talking about how like, oh yeah, everyone else is leaving. There's only going to be a few of us. And every year for the people who like don't go anywhere during break, we call it Orphans Dinner. Mm-hmm. And like we all get together. It's always like this really small, tight group. And then in the climax, it's like, oh, no, these other three sororities are all still here.
Yeah.
And all the frat brothers are still here, which we can chalk that up to mind control. But like it just sort of logically doesn't make any sense.
And also the girls you've been following the whole movie mm-hmm. are the ones who are the loudest and mm-hmm. most upfront about their displeasure with what the frat guys are doing.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden for it to just be, well, no, it's actually everybody that we're doing this to. It's right. like, I feel like that kind of breaks your story a little
bit. And then
bit.
Also like, where are the other frats?
Yeah.
There's one frat and there's like five sororities. What's the,
that's hot is what that is. Nice.
And then we can even get started at this point of the how mind control-y is this man's goo?
Great question.
Tell me, Clay. I'm asking you. Describe
the
viscosity.
Ugh. I don't know. Like that. Yeah. Like that whole thing.
Because if they're genuinely being against their will.
Yeah.
Controlled to go murder a bunch of their classmates. And then when she breaks the bust and the mind control ends, they just lock a bunch of guys who'd been forced into becoming murderers into a burning building and let them die.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
It's a pretty...
we're supposed to be rooting for them.
That's the thing.
We're supposed to be like, yeah, you go, girl.
I think that's part of what we're kind of dancing around here is like that ending is presented in such a self-empowering way.
Her bitch has been rebuilt.
Her bitch has been rebuilt. And there's nothing in the movie. So much of the movie feels like it's the filmmaker directly stabbing you in the chest with what they're trying to do.
With an icicle.
Yeah. There's nothing about that ending that makes me think that the writers and the director think they've done anything wrong here.
Yeah.
And that this killing of however many innocent people
right.
is totally fine because now she,
like if
she can wear a sexy dress again or whatever.
If the twist had been that the goo from the bust was actually doing nothing mm-hmm. and they were all just like this.
Right.
Then I'd be like, oh, all right. Well, yeah, sure. It's a horror movie. Burn them alive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. There is so much of this. The story is incomplete, I think,
mm-hmm.
because there needs to be a turn.
Yeah.
And the turn never comes.
Yeah.
And so everything is exactly how you think it is.
Yeah.
And when you get to the end, you find yourself going like, that was it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There was nothing more to kind of get into on this. Like, even in the 2006 Black Xmas, during our Patreon coverage, we talked about how the...
Patreon.com.
We talked about how the boyfriend in that one sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just kind of a shitty guy. He's rude to all the girls. He's whatever. But even after they have their big fight,
mm-hmm.
and he calls all the girls bitches, spoiled bitches, and he storms out of the house, later on, he comes back. And he tries to get them to leave. Like, when they tell him someone's killing... us, like they're mm-hmm. picking people, everybody's getting murdered, he's like, well, we gotta fucking get out of here. And mm-hmm. they're like, no, we think so-and-so's up in the attic.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to go up there, but he's still an asshole about it, but he's like, fine, but we're gonna go up there, we're gonna see nothing's there, and we're immediately leaving. Like, he at least, like, even though he sucks, the surprise with that character is that he's actually not the worst, you know?
Right,
like,
yeah.
He's not the bad guy. He's
yeah.
not, like, gonna abandon them or whatever. That character in this movie absolutely would have just been like, all right, bye, go die.
Right.
Like, or here, let me help kill you. Like, there would right. have been no...
Yeah.
No opportunity for somebody to be, like, shitty, but not straight up evil.
Yeah.
That seems to be the only option in this version. Is
yeah.
like, the minute a character comes across as, like, oh, they kind of suck. It's like, yeah, because they're the bad guy. They're all the bad
right.
guy. Right.
Yeah. The thing that's so frustrating about mm-hmm. this story is that you know everything that is happening
mm-hmm.
in the first, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then from that point on, it's just like a bad college drama.
Mm-hmm.
And then they remember they're supposed to be a horror movie, and then they start doing stuff at the end.
Yeah.
But there's so much of the middle of this movie that is just like people talking to each other and not about anything interesting, where like in the
yeah.
the original, so much of that middle section is building this tension about trying to yeah. figure out where their roommate is.
Yep.
And
the girl from town who got killed in the park.
Yep. They're you know, building up mm-hmm. Jess's boyfriend as a potential whatever, finding
yep.
out that she was pregnant and
yep.
all this kind of stuff. It's just really frustrating because it feels like overall someone who it feels like this was made by someone who understood, or I can't decide which way I want to go with this analogy, because it almost feels like someone who watched the original and was like, I can't believe how misogynistic that movie was.
Mm.
So I'm going to push back against that by making an extremely, what's the opposite of misogyny?
I don't know.
Whatever, you know.
Female empowerment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it also, again, like I was saying, feels like someone who recognizes
yeah.
what the original is about, but and just can't stop themselves from just like explaining it to you.
Yeah, it's interesting in the sense, like, I think these kinds of, like, getting close to these opposing views of how to handle this sort of stuff, it's almost there in the movie, except at the end, it's just flattened out again like everything else, where...
Yeah.
You have Riley, who's been assaulted
mm-hmm.
and who is coping pretty well, to be honest.
Yeah, she seems to be doing okay.
Like, she seems to be still participating in friendships. She has her job at the cafe. She's mm-hmm. still going to class. She seems like she's in decent enough spirits. You know, she hangs out with her friends still. Like, okay, she's not running around in sexy dresses, but, like, she doesn't have to if she doesn't want to.
Right.
And then you have her friend Chris, the one who's making petitions and trying to get people fired and posting videos without people's consent. And it's interesting because, like, during the movie, there's this, like, Chris is like, well, you should be fighting. Like, you should be fighting all
right.
the time.
Yeah.
And Riley, for a while, kind of gives another option, which is, like, maybe I'm just coping. Like, maybe
yeah.
I need time. Maybe, like, people react to trauma in different ways. Maybe
yeah.
you don't have to approach every interaction like it's a battle. And then at the end, she's like, you were right. I
yeah.
should have been fighting.
Yeah, that's...
Fuck. It's so disappointing.
Yeah, and the other... And Chris never has an equal realization.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the moral of this movie is, yes, you need to fight.
Yeah. Yeah. The moral of this movie was Chris is right.
Yeah. It, also, like, the end of this movie turning into 15 girls showing up and beating the shit out of a bunch of, it reminded me of, like, a bad episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that last night.
That's
we were watching it
that.
And I,
yeah, yeah.
and then I was like, oh, this actually is almost exactly like an episode of Buffy the
yeah.
Vampire Slayer, because there's the one where she and Cordelia go to the frat party
mm-hmm.
and it turns out that they're sacrificing girls to their snake god or
mm-hmm.
something, which I remember being a pretty good episode.
Yeah.
And they do this better in that.
Yes.
In an hour
yeah,
than they do in this.
20 years before this movie came out.
Yeah.
It was kind of the same type of, like, lesson,
yeah,
if you want to put it that way, but I think handled better.
And, you know, the frustrating thing to me about this is I feel like it's trying to hit similar concepts as the original,
mm-hmm,
but the original just did it so deftly,
yeah,
and so with so much more finesse,
mm-hmm,
than this, which is just like smashing a baseball bat through a table. But again, I don't know.
Right.
I think that alone doesn't make it a bad movie. I think it's, yeah, that on top of the fact that it's just not a good,
right,
well-written movie.
Right. Like if this had a more interesting plot,
mm-hmm,
and like a more clean, like sort of a better assembled plot,
mm-hmm,
and more narrative coherence,
yeah,
I feel like you could get away with this a little bit more.
Oh, I forgot the one. There's two twists.
Mm-hmm.
One, that Carrie always is involved, which, yeah, fucking obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
And two, that the one friend is actually...
Yes.
Like, that's almost interesting.
Yeah.
Having the one friend, because I feel like that is... You can kind of extrapolate that into some people who are around now and who tend to work against their own... you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, in The Handmaid's Tale, in the Margaret Atwood book, it's Serena Joy, you know, mm-hmm, it's the wives of the generals who've traded in,
sure,
their, yeah, freedom and their rights for security and, mm-hmm, safety and kind of a more materially comfortable life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of an interesting concept,
mm-hmm,
but then they just break her neck and that's the end of,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, let's get rid of her.
Yeah. Also, the guys who were possessed...
Mm-hmm.
Are possessed by the soul of Calvin Hobbes or whatever his name is.
Calvin Klein. Who is this? They say the spirit. That's an interesting term to me because I don't know if it means like the conscious soul of this specific guy or more like the general vibe he used to bring.
Yeah, because there's a bunch of them.
Uh-huh. Some of them seem like masked zombies.
Yeah. But then there's the one at the end that they're, yeah, like genuflecting towards.
Yeah.
As being like, they refer to him as the king.
Yeah.
And he looks exactly like the other ones. I don't know.
I have no idea.
Methinks this part was not that much fleshed out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really does just bring the whole thing like, I don't know. There's no sense, like, as much as this movie is supposed to, it kind of purporting to be about Riley and her overcoming her rape and this sort of like reclamation of her power or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really feel that cathartic.
No, it really doesn't.
You know, it's not like one of the things again about like a movie like Last House on the Left or something.
Mm-hmm.
Even as it's like intense and can be kind of horrible, there is a level of catharsis when the murderers of those girls, the like rapists and murderers of those girls, when they get their comeuppance.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a part of you that is like fully on board.
Yeah.
Like, fuck yes,
well, I think,
kill them. But in this, I don't.
Yeah. I think it's a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
One, the only person that you really know as a character who gets any sort of comeuppance is Carrie Elwes. And
yeah,
you don't spend enough time with him for it to mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is, she never gets any sort of like real catharsis towards the person who assaulted her.
Yeah.
Because he's not a character.
Right.
And so,
right,
she might have put a knife through his head. I don't know.
No, I think he's the one at the very end who's yelling at them as they like bolt the door.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
not satisfying.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. I don't.
I can't remember. I've been trying this whole time we're talking to remember the name of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It came out, I want to say around the same time, maybe a couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
The one with Carey Mulligan, where she goes out and pretends to be drunk and then she picks guys up and then brings them back to her thing and ends up killing them.
Oh,
and it's like a rape revenge movie.
Yeah.
I cannot remember that for the life. It's called like... Hold on. I know people are probably screaming at me here.
As they should.
I think it was Carey Mulligan. Let's find out.
I don't know what movie this is, so.
Promising Young Woman.
Oh.
I think that is a movie dealing with the similar concepts as this.
Mm-hmm.
Done, what year was that? 2020. Okay, so following year. It's so much more creatively done.
Yeah.
And the ending to that is so, you really don't know how to feel based on what happens. You ever plan on watching the movie?
Probably not.
Okay. Sorry, spoilers for at least to the point that I can remember.
Mm.
She ends up getting killed before the end of the movie.
Oh, wow.
But in her getting killed, it triggers something that that brings the ultimate downfall of the person she was going after. And so there's this weird anti-catharsis followed by catharsis element where she's been killed, so you're kind of aghast, but then ultimately after death she gets the revenge she was after.
It's
pretty interesting. It's been a while. I've only seen it once. I've been meaning to check it out again, but it's I feel like it was the other movie that was explicitly about rape culture and that kind of stuff that got much more play than this one did.
Yeah.
Probably for the better.
For good reasons.
For good reasons, yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about with this before we wrap it up?
I guess since this is a horror movie podcast, I will talk about the fact that I don't find this movie scary.
Not at all. No.
Like there's no real suspense in it. I think because there's not only is there no question of who's doing it, there's kind of no question of like what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like in the 2006 remake, you know very blatantly like, oh, it's Billy, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the whole, they're constantly focused on it's Billy. The spoiler, you know, twist is that it's not just Billy.
Right, yeah.
But you know there is a crazed maniac in the house killing the girls.
Yeah.
And the suspense and the tension comes from, first, when are they going to figure it out?
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to die in the meantime? And then, how are they going to escape?
Yep. And also, that's a movie where, say what you want about it.
Mm.
If you've never seen it, I guarantee you cannot guess what is coming in that movie. Like, it's so weird.
Yeah, like the kills and the
backstory and, explanations.
Oh my God,
it's just insane.
It's really fucking weird. And in this, everything is so surface level that there is no tension.
Yeah.
And there's no suspense. It's PG-13, so you know, there's a couple decent bits around like certain kills or attack sequences, like the home invasion. There's a couple moments where it's sort of like, oh, okay, that was interesting, but nothing really.
It also kind of forgets its own story to a certain extent.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've got the girl who gets the snow angel kill.
Yep.
And I think maybe there's one other one right after that. Mm-hmm. And then they just kind of forget about all that stuff.
Yep.
Until the end of the movie. And then they're like, oh, also we killed them because they're part of this thing. Anyway, killing you.
Yeah,
so it's like, that's another thing. That's another instance where opening it up to all these other sororities feels like you are kind of ejecting out of your story.
Right.
Because you've set up this idea that these girls are being specifically targeted because there are personal items that have been taken from them.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, they're also attacking all sororities.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's a movie that seems like it doesn't really know what kind of movie it wants to be.
Yeah.
As much as it knows very, almost too clearly, the sort of message it wants to send, I feel like it just forgets entirely that it's supposed to be a scary movie.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think the attempts to be scary are very limp.
Yep.
It's just a lot of cheap jump scares.
They do your favorite creeping around the house slowly for an extended period of time.
Yeah, you got to do it. You have to do it. Otherwise, how are people going to know to be scared?
I mean, at least in this one, they knew for sure someone was in the house. So you understood why they were creeping around.
Yeah, even though there were
inexplicable guy with a bow and arrow.
Yeah, there were people in the house at points that didn't make any logistical sense.
Yeah,
I don't know. One of the reasons, possibly, why this movie's so disjointed is that Blumhouse announced they were making this movie in June of 2019, and it was in theaters in December of 2019.
Oh, wow.
And when they announced it, they had not announced who was writing it or anything.
Oh, wow.
They went from announcing it to choosing the creative team, casting the movie, writing the movie, shooting the movie.
In like 6 months?
Yes.
Holy shit.
Which is pretty intense.
Yeah.
Very, you don't really see that, at least not from like a major studio.
And now I kind of understand why.
Yeah. Because
there was no time to say, hey, maybe we should make this a little less in your face.
Well, the funny thing is, right? Given that situation, if I wrote this script, right, as they filmed it.
Yep.
And I handed it to my co-writer. I would hope my co-writer would say, we should probably make this a little less complicated because we don't have a lot of time to make this movie.
Yeah.
How do we slim this down to focus on the things we want to focus on and have this and maximize the storytelling we can do?
Yeah.
Instead of just having to trying to get so much of this stuff in there that's just going to feel like it's, you know, plot threads all over the place that aren't really being resolved and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. I guess that's going to do it for Black Christmas 2019, which is not on our list. I don't think either of us would want to put it on the list.
No.
It's a move. I think this is interesting because, like I said at the beginning, it's a movie that is very much of its time and I think is just kind of been memory hold.
Yeah.
And I would be... So Black Christmas 2006 kind of had a resurgence among people who have seen it and liked it. And you know, I would be very surprised if that happens. I don't want to say that because I don't want to be mean, but... I'll be really interested to see if that happens with something like this.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I don't really think there's a lot in this to grab onto for future generations.
Yeah. I feel like if anything, this movie is more likely to see a renaissance in the sense of like a lot of people watching it and taking it as like, oh, this is what people were really like in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And this becoming almost like a little bit of rage bait.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I could see this being taught in a college from that perspective, being like, these people are fucking intense.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a real weird curio of the last 10 years of horror movies. It feels like it. I had read in the IMDb trivia, I don't know how true this is, that they made this movie because Blumhouse had been criticized for not having any movies that were made by women at the time. And so they very quickly like pushed this into production to sort of check that box. I don't know if that's true. Wouldn't surprise me. I've seen more egregious things like that. But I think that's going to do it for Black Christmas. That's going to do it for the year. And that's going to put an end to our year of remakes, even though we didn't get to do the Robert Englund Phantom of the Opera.
There's always 2026.
There is. we are going to be back in January with Phenomena. Dario Argento's Phenomena on our main feed here. And as I said before, if you want to help support the show, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Follow us. Get caught up on all of the remakes and reboots we covered this year. And follow us as we go down the two-lane highway of sequels. Thank you guys for listening and supporting the show. Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks, Clay.
We'll see you next time.
Happy New Year.